Hello, this is Claire Levy. Coming up in this edition of the DRWF podcast, Living with Diabetes, we have the final instalment of our special series of programmes looking specifically at women's health. In this episode, we've brought together two previous guests with DRWF CEO Sarah Tutton. They explore some of the less common but more challenging aspects of the condition.
We're judged all the time, not just on what you look like, but also how you function. You know, if you get in the menopause and your lifespan's over, like, you know, you're redundant, you're invisible, and now you add health issues. So I think it's been difficult to try and be really open about having type 2 diabetes, for me anyway.
Laura, do you talk about the diabetes a lot?
I probably did at the time, yes. I know that I'm supposed to be having annual checkups because my risk of developing type 2 diabetes after having gestational diabetes is quite high. And that is not something that I do, that I should be more proactive about.
But we need to create more awareness around this is by bringing people together to share their lived experience of life in general and how diabetes fits into that. It's placing people with diabetes at the heart of what we do, first and foremost for DRWF.
Hear the full interview coming up next.
Views, information or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent the opinions, standards or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them. The aim of podcasts is to educate and inform, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. Neither DRWF nor any of its employees or owners shall be held liable or responsible for the accuracy or completeness for any errors or omissions in podcasts or for any damage you may suffer as a result of failing to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who is familiar with your situation.
Welcome back, ladies. If you could just introduce yourself for our panel audience.
Hi everyone, I'm Sujila Kershi and I'm a comedian, performer, you know, jack of all, master of a few things, I think.
Laura, if you can just introduce yourself again.
So my name's Laura Spence and I am a midwife who has ADHD and a previous diagnosis of gestational diabetes.
And Sarah.
And I'm Sarah Tutton, Chief Executive of the Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation.
So in this session, I think we're just going to have a chat about the crossover, maybe. Maybe Sarah can always give us some more background around research and what the charity is doing, which I think is really interesting, and why, I suppose, in this instance, Sarah, if you want to kick off, why this conversation and this podcast is so important.
Yeah, okay, thanks. I think we've as women, we in general, we face lots of health challenges as we age through from puberty, pregnancy, menopause, all of those kind of life things that are thrown at us as women. And we have to navigate the ins and outs of those areas. And I think when you add diabetes into the mix, there's just also an explosive kind of mix. And I think we've been talking for some time about the importance, the lack of awareness out there around women's health. And we wanted to bring together a group of amazing women who were willing to share their stories about life in general and what that looks like in terms of family life, career, professional life, how they navigate those general women's health issues, and then thinking about how diabetes adds to that mix. And I think we've heard some fantastic stories today, which will be shared, obviously, through this podcast series. A hugely important area for us, and really pleased to be able to delve into this in more detail with the group of women that we've brought together today.
So, Julia, you've talked about living with type 2 diabetes. And I think something that we wanted to touch on was stigma, and you've mentioned that. How does that impact you? Do you think it is more around the type 2 diabetes? Do you think it's a cultural thing or is it a general thing? What have you had to deal with?
It's weird because I think, you know, certainly before I became type 2 diabetes, I think I assumed there was only the one, you get an injection and you've got to give him some Coke, not Coke. The other, you know, the Coca-Cola, other drinks are available. And I thought that's the only one, you know, and that was the kind of stigma maybe I had given diabetes, you know, that's what happens, to have a little sugar low and then, you know. But certainly, I think being diagnosed type 2 diabetes, I was really reluctant, well, I suppose most people are reluctant to become diabetic, but I was told I was going to be pre-diabetic, and I really thought, oh, come on, I can fix this, but I didn't know how to do it. And eventually when I went on metformin, and my mum, initially I remember her saying, oh, you know, don't, like, there's lots of people who've got diabetes, you know. She said, oh, you know your uncle's nephew, second cousin, well, he had diabetes, and he had his whole legs chopped off. And I was like, okay, that's great, Mum. And then she told me about someone else who had their foot chopped off, and they died. Oh no, they died too. And I was like, okay, this is really, really like depressing, because like she's, you know, she's obviously now given me this really scary thing, but also a kind of unsaid thing, like don't necessarily share this with the family, you know, because it's got this negative connotations. And I also see it as a, you know, as a cross to bear sometimes in terms of work, you know. I probably don't share it in the comedy industry, and, you know, in because I think I'm afraid that, you know, for all the health reasons that you were saying that we have, like menopause, you know, women have menopause, we're having babies or whatever, we're judged all the time, not just on what you look like, but also how you function. You know, if you get in the menopause, then your lifespan's over, like, you know, you're redundant, you're invisible, and now you add health issues, and now you're completely, like, you know, useless. So where, you know, your work will dry up. Everything is related to how you feel, look, you know, and your health. So I think it's been difficult to try and be really open about having type 2 diabetes, for me anyway.
Laura, do you talk about the diabetes a lot?
I probably did at the time, yes. And actually, it probably felt like, because I suffer quite a lot from rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is a kind of well-known, almost like a trauma response. And I think I probably had quite a big reaction to getting the diabetes diagnosis during pregnancy, almost as if I was failing. I was failing my body was failing me. I felt hugely disappointed. I remember crying a lot after them telling me, but that potentially was because I knew how the consequence might play out, because I had a sort of set of ideals in my head about what this birth would look like for this third baby. And, you know, almost instantly when I got that diagnosis, I kind of knew all of that would have to be undone, and I'd need to go back to the drawing board to try and make a new plan. I think for me, I probably had quite a dramatic reaction to it. I don't know that I necessarily talk about it an awful lot now. I know that I'm supposed to be having annual checkups, because my risk of developing type 2 diabetes after having gestational diabetes is quite high. And that is not something that I do, that I should be more proactive about. But again, as an ADHDer, I definitely use food for dopamine seeking, and I tend to eat really high sugar foods. And my weight is increasing, and I know that probably that's the way that I'm heading, unless I do something to change that in the sort of the near future.
And Sarah, you've got an interest in gestational, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. So my daughter had undiagnosed gestational diabetes in a recent pregnancy. And I've seen how that has traumatised her somewhat. Having a late cesarean section, which was probably too late, trauma to mum and baby, and how that's impacted really on her physical health in the first instance, and recovery of a traumatic cesarean section, but also, you know, the mental health aspect of not knowing that she'd felt unwell, but not being diagnosed, and then giving birth to a bigger than average baby, whose life could have been at risk, and how that impacts then on how you feel about that birth experience. And you know, she's also now in that place whereby she's wondering what the future holds. I've had a bigger than average baby. What does that mean in terms of any future health risk for him? She's also going for a diabetes test herself in a few weeks' time. And of course, working in the field of diabetes, I've given her a list of questions that she needs to ask and interrogate her healthcare professional with, because there's a huge background of diabetes in her father's side of the family, type 1 and type 2. So I think, you know, doing what we do best, we put all of those things together and sometimes come up with the wrong answer. But the fact that she's gone through this recent experience has just kind of put diabetes front and centre for her, and just really keen to understand what that means now in terms of future risk of type 2 diabetes. You mentioned, Laura, the paper that talks about increased risk of ADHD for babies that are a product of gestational diabetes. And I read that paper recently too, probably because I've had a more personal interest in it. I've been, you know, rooting around looking for things. And it's a scary proposition. Just makes you wonder how many women are missed with a diagnosis of gestational diabetes.
Yeah, and actually, you know, it sounds as if your daughter's had a really traumatic experience, and I hope that she's got the right support in place for that, to work through that, because that is a huge birth trauma, and that then has a huge impact then on, you know, her navigating her way through parenthood in those early months and years. It's really tricky.
We've looked maybe or touched on hormonal changes, on insulin sensitivity during menstruation, pregnancy, menopause. Is there anything there, Laura, that you would want to look at about managing diabetes and those hormonal changes, maybe with your experience around pregnancy?
Well, I was actually, what sprung to mind when you were talking there about hormonal changes was polycystic ovarian syndrome. So I currently work in the field of sexual health in a sexual health clinic for a local charity. And I see quite a lot of women who have a diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome. And obviously with that comes insulin resistance. And lots of women who have PCOS will also display symptoms of ADHD as well, which is a really interesting correlation, because of course if you have polycystic ovarian syndrome, then you go on to have a baby, you're more likely to have gestational diabetes, and therefore then that research paper suggests that you're more likely to want to have a child with ADHD. However, what I would say is that actually, as a woman with ADHD, my food habits tend to be, I make poorer choices depending on whereabouts I am in my menstrual cycle. So typically in the week before my period is due to come, my estrogen level is low, my progestogen level is high, but also then my dopamine level is low because my estrogen's low, and estrogen and dopamine are like BFFs. If one is high, the other one's high, and that's when we feel better. When progesterone levels are higher, I'm hungrier. And because my dopamine's lower, I'm more likely to reach for donuts, sugary foods, high carbohydrates than I am those healthier options. I just wonder how much that has to play in all of the hormonal factors, and I guess it's another area of women's health that's just not well enough researched.
So Gila, I'm sure you've got something to add there hormones.
I was going to say that I do remember when I had my periods, I used to always get like those really must have. My go-to was Cadbury's fruit and nut, other chocolates available. fruit and nut, anything like was crunchy. I think it was a bit of aggression as well, and also the sweet tooth. And I couldn't, you know, it wasn't like I had no control over it. It was like, I know that sounds ridiculous. I mean, you don't have to say yes, but I would have that. I must have some sugar. Obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of the estrogen, and, you know, I still don't know, even though I'm going through all of it now, so I should probably do a bit of research on that. And in terms of now, I would not have put menopausal symptoms together with it affecting diabetes, and that has really been mind blown, because that explains a lot. You know, I think as women, you know, we talked about like trying to ignore these things, like the menopause, it happens to all of us, and we're supposed to just get on with it. You know, all our rites of passage in terms of what happens to our bodies, you know, you have your first period, but it's all really quite traumatic, you know, and nobody really, and we are just supposed to just slide through puberty, slide through pregnancy, you know, and then the menopause, you just kind of accept it. But actually, it is difficult. It's huge changes that we are not given the time and space to experience, and then you add the complication of diabetes. Of course, it makes sense that it's gonna go into battle together to affect your body, you know, both mental and physical well-being.
And where's, we were talking earlier about advice and information. It's very easy to get sucked into the this is bad for you, that's good for you.
Yeah,
you know, you've got to keep on top of, well, what's my source of information, and is it
if the source says I can eat chocolate and back, you know, all the goody stuff that I really like, I'm like, look, turns out we were wrong, we can eat sweets, we can have cake, turns out it was all wrong, the studies. That's not by the way, please don't, if anyone's listening to this, it really isn't, the rules have not changed, it's still bad.
But in moderation.
Everything, and I think that's it. I think moderation is a really key word in terms of managing, you know, diabetes. I think we're too strict with ourselves. Like, we can't have any of this. We've got to cut it all out. It's all in, all out. And I think moderation has been a really, really interesting word for me.
But you talked about portion size earlier.
Portion size, because South Asian people, we, you know, like we're talking about rice portions. You know, if you've got a big plate, that big plate needs to be filled up with all of the rice. You know, so it's rice. That's probably a whole family's rice in a non-South Asian household. And then you've got the curry on top. And then you can't waste food, because that's, you know, that's not one. You don't waste food. So you've got to eat all of it. So the portion control has been really... And actually, I am better with rice. And especially since I discovered you can freeze it and then have it after you defrost it, because it gets rid of the... What was the thing?
Lowers the glycemic index.
Yeah, so that's that. And again, with, you know, bread, it doesn't make it... So this is the thing about moderation. It's not made it good for you. Yeah. It's made it better for you. Yeah. So therefore, I can have that piece of toast from the freezer. And to be honest, it's so tiring to kind of defrost it in the micro... You know, anyway, to kind of make it that I won't over-exceed on eating that. Whereas I might have gone through a whole loaf of bread when it was nice and fresh and, you know, and delicious. I was talking about chapatis earlier on. Like, if you make fresh chapatis, there's nothing like more delicious than fresh chapatis straight out of the pan. And my grandmother used to ban anyone eating something straight out of the pan because they'll eat more of it. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's like trying to find little ways to moderate. Yeah, moderation. I think that's the key word.
Yeah. And I guess that sometimes it can start as those micro moderations almost. Like what you're saying about your nan preventing someone eating it straight off the pan, then that's like a micro moderation, isn't it? Like, well, we're not going to do that. We're just going to eat what you've been assigned type thing. But again, as someone with ADHD, moderation is really difficult because I'm absolutely all or nothing. And I find it really difficult to get a good balance between, you know, exercising 2 to 3 times a week or no exercise at all versus no, I have to do it 7 days a week, because if I'm not doing it, then I'm not doing it right. I think it's really difficult to get that balance right in my head.
Do your family help? I'm thinking, you know, if you are madly macrameing or crocheting, do they just sort of say, oh, mum's
on it again? What's wrong with mum? They'll say, why is mum hyper focusing on something? And my husband has been very good at beginning to notice these things now, like, right, okay, well, you've been on this now for like 4 days, something is simmering under the surface. Like, what is it that you're lacking right now that you're seeking in other ways? But I've not really learned to take that without being offended now. I'll be like, oh, shut up, I'm just interested in it. Don't you try and tell me what to do, type thing. So yeah, I mean, we get there, but it's almost a bit like I heard someone describe ADHD as being a Ferrari brain, almost like your brain is driving a Ferrari car with the brakes of a bicycle, that you're trying to slow it down, but you almost can't. Because if you can't go full pelt, then you almost feel as if there's no point in doing it then. But I think I'm definitely, the more I understand about myself, which is why I'm such a huge advocate for, lots of people say, oh, don't label your children, you don't want a label for this, that, or the next thing. But actually, labels are so important, because regardless, you're going to get labelled. People will give you alternative labels like, you're lazy, you're too much, you're too emotional, you're too chatty. And actually, what labels give us care instructions, don't they? We get labels on our clothes and it tells you how to look after them. So if you have the right label, then you know how to look after yourself better. And, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. It's definitely a gradual process. But for anyone that's listening who does have ADHD, I think I can understand that moderation is key, but it's not always achievable or easy to do.
So do you have a top tip for people with diabetes?
I think, yes, talking to your family, talking to your friends, getting them to notice your habits, but externalise a lot of it, whether that's writing it down in post-it notes and just sticking it up everywhere. Because a lot of the time for me, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. I'm terrible for taking medication. If my husband tidies up the kitchen and moves my little medication pot, I'll forget, because it's not there to see when I'm making my coffee in the morning. So it's just about getting the people round about you to understand the way that your brain works, the things that are going to help, and externalising as much as possible. Write it down, calendars, alarms, reminders, whatever that might be. You've got to do whatever works for you, and it's not going to be the same for everybody.
So, Julie, you were saying that on tour you would never mention.
Oh my God, no.
Never talk about your type 2.
No. I mean, you know, I think you can. I don't know. Does it come under legally? Does it come under disability? I don't know. But I don't know what workplaces do consider it. But you could say that I want an adjustment, like I'll need this, this, and this when I get to the venue. But I never do that, because that feels like it's highlighting it. It's I don't know. I still have that thing about judgment. It's like, you know, people are going to judge me on this, or I don't want to make a fuss. You know, I don't want to. It's my body. It's up to me to manage my body. But I mean, I loved what you just said about that your husband, you know, like says, hey, what's really going on here? Because I live on my own, so I haven't got that. And that would be, I think I've taken that as a top tip, but I could ask my family because they see me regularly. But it's really the onus for me, because I'm living on my own, because I'm dealing with it on my own. He's like, well, it's my body, my responsibility. And I've got to, it's, you know, I can't put that on someone else. And they don't want to know about it. Why would they want to know about it? You know, I mean, I don't always understand how my body works. How can I make them understand that, you know, I'm feeling a bit kind of dizzy and blurry because I haven't eaten before I go on stage? And that was been really problematic in kind of reducing my gigs, I guess. So I'm already doing that myself to look after me. I don't need someone else now to not book me because, you know, they think I'm going to be a liability of some sort.
Oh, that's so sad to hear that, though, isn't it? That's the kind of society that we're living in, is that we have those assumptions that we're going to be causing a problem. But actually, that's what equity is about, isn't it? It's about leveling the playing field. And somebody in your position, for example, that's not diabetic, doesn't need all of those things. So therefore, it's not equal for you
Yeah, I
in
know.
that sense. And I think diabetes is a protected characteristic among the Equalities Act. So it's something that you certainly can ask for reasonable adjustments for. Not easy, not easy to do though.
No. From the work that the charity's done, I think you're more than aware of bringing people together to talk and how much support that gives to people living with all forms of diabetes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just to pick up on Sajila's point about judgment, not wanting to be judged or seem to be making a fuss, is something that as women we see all the time. Not wanting to say to your employer, I've got brain fog going on at the moment, it's the menopause, it's the time of my, you know, it's the time of life. I don't want anyone to think less of me being capable of doing my job, etc. So you don't make a fuss about it. And I think that's something that's kind of like instilled in us. But we need to kind of get over that. And one way that we can create more awareness around this is by bringing people together to share their lived experience of life in general and how diabetes fits into that. So as Claire knows, having worked with the charity for quite some years now, we spend a lot of time scoping out projects that we really feel we put people with diabetes at the heart of. You know, and that's not just paying lip service by having asked one or two people what they think of this. It's actually bringing those people on board from the outset of a new project, using them to inform our scoping group and our focus group activity to ensure that we understand who the audience for that resource is, what those accessibility needs are. Laura, you said earlier that, you know, there's a lack of resources for people that are living with neurodiversity, and you know, maybe there are gaps to be plugged there. We believe that there are, particularly when you're living with something like neurodiversity and diabetes. But it's about putting people with diabetes at the heart of what we do and crafting resources that we believe really make a difference, really meet a need in whatever way we produce those, whether it's patient information literature or whether it's video resources, podcasting like this, sharing just informative and informal lived experience, whatever that is, it's placing people with diabetes at the heart of what we do, first and foremost for DRWF.
So I've got a few little quick silly questions for you just to end with. So Laura, would you have a diabetes superhero name?
Oh God, you need to come back to me on that because I've got a really slow process and it'll take me 3 to 5 working days to come up with that.
I forgot that one. Sajila. What's your superhero name?
My superhero name would be what, diabetes related.
Yeah.
All the sugar in the world.
Woman.
Woman. Yeah, at the end of course, woman, yes.
Fantastic. So, which would you rather have, a lightsaber or a magic wand?
A magic wand.
Okay. Laura?
Oh, a magic wand.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah.
Excellent. What was your go-to hypo treatment when you were living with diabetes?
Jelly babies.
Yeah. Did you overdo it though?
Yeah, I mean, not just a few, I would have the whole bag. And actually, jelly babies are the thing that lots of midwives, you know, when they're teaching antenatal education, jelly babies are the things that midwives will say, you know, just in case you feel a bit low on energy during labour, have some jelly babies in your bag. I think probably that's where it came from. But yeah.
Excellent. Do you have a hypo go-to?
Oh God, nutty chocolate.
Oh yeah, back to a bit slow. Bit slow on acting chocolate.
Yes, that is a problem. That obviously my super character will combat and cure, because the super character is going to be all the sugar in the world will allow you to do that, and it's magic sugar. right? Magic sugar, people. So it will not make me spike.
Have you come up with your superhero name yet, Laura?
But it's inappropriate. I can't navigate away from it. Sounds more like a porn star name.
Oh, go on.
Sugar tits.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, on that note, can I thank you all for doing the panel and Laura for dialing in and wish you all the best.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation, and that episode completes our special series on women's health, part of our regular podcast series, Living with Diabetes. You can find helpful guidance on all aspects of diabetes, together with details on how to support the charity, fundraising events, news and information on our website at drwf.org.uk. Thanks to all our guests who've helped us explore diabetes and women's health, and to you for joining us.
This podcast has been supported by Abbott. Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2025. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.